Okay, thank you, Susan. Well, greetings again. I just want to put this on the gallery view. There we are. Well, we're nearing the end of this chapter, this fascicle. And I do want to express my thanks and my deep appreciation for hanging in there as we contemplate some of these last paragraphs. I came across a poem in the traditional waka style, Japanese waka style poem that Dogen wrote, that connects us right back to, again, the first beginning of this fascicle, the Gatha. And I'm not sure when he wrote this poem, but it's pretty simple, so I'm going to start us off with this. I'll read the translation rather than the Japanese. It goes, "How venerable seven Buddhas' primordial words are. By studying them, we go beyond the six realms." How venerable seven Buddhas' primordial words. By studying them, we go beyond the six realms. And that's a translation by Shohaku Okumura, one of the great translators of Dogen's material today. But there's one more I'd like to read too. This one, same translation, or same Japanese verse translated by Stephen Heine. Do you know his last name, Kate?
I don't know for sure.
No, we don't know for sure. H-E-I-N.
It's Heine.
Heine.
Stephen Heine.
So the poem goes like, his translation goes like this. "How august, studying the old words of the seven Buddhas, you pass beyond the six realms." Now, the six realms, as I think probably most of us know, are the dimensions of existence that we travel through according to the Buddhist cosmology, that there's six realms that we travel through, dimensions. And the dimensions are the realm of the gods, the demigods or asuras, humans, animals, hungry ghosts, and those living in the hell realm. And what these are the dimensions of samsara. This world, which is characterized by dukkha or suffering or general dissatisfaction. But there's two points in the poem that kind of stood out for me. First, the word that is translated as study in Japanese is manabu, which means study, yes, but it does include a sense of studying with the whole body and the mind. So in a sense, the whole self. So what would be an example? Judo o manabu, Aikido o manabu. So when we study the martial arts, like Aikido or Judo, it's like the mind, but the whole body is there studying as well. So this is indicating something to us. And the second point tells us that by the deep study and practice of the Gatha, right, these primordial words of the Buddhas, one opens to the ultimate awakening beyond the six realms. In other words, we awaken to the reality that is beyond the samsaric world that we experience day after day after day. However, Okumura does point out in his brief commentary to this poem, he wrote, "Bodhisattvas go beyond samsara," which is true. Bodhisattvas, he says, go beyond samsara, and yet they don't escape from samsara. Just as a lotus flower blooms beyond the surface of the muddy water, and yet the root is still in the muddy water. Well, that is a great segue for the next paragraph we're going to look at. And that's paragraph 35. I want to make sure I got that right.
It's not 37?
No, 35. Purify your own mind. So I'm just going to start there, and also do, and maybe I'll do 36 too. So purify your own mind. This means that you refrain from, purify through refrain from, you that is your own, you that is mind, your own that refrains from, mind that refrains from, mind that does purify through do, or through carry out, through your own do, you do. This is the teaching of all Buddhas. So Dogen addresses that again, that line in the Gatha about purifying the mind. Or as we say in our Bodhisattva vows, free all beings. It's just refrain from, he says. So our activities of body, speech, and mind usually begin with I, me, mine. And we strive and bumble, trying to polish ourselves, make ourselves better, make ourselves shine, make ourselves perfect as we can. But I think this obscure passage that we just looked at is asking us to take the focus off I, me, mine, and just refrain from, just do, just carry out. I think what Dogen is telling us, that it's not necessary to have an inner debate always focusing on you or on me before acting. Let your activity be free from you. And I think this is what brings our Zazen practice off the cushion into the world. For example, giving without I am giving, or I should give, but just giving. And this, of course, is also true in the world of martial arts. I remember in my Aikido practice, there comes a time in your practice where you have two or three people attacking at once. And it's an exercise where you have to let go of I. What should I do? How am I going to handle this? What technique am I going to use? That has to drop away, or you just get entangled. But if you can let go of that I, even briefly, the body knows what to do. If you can let go even briefly of the I, the giving knows what to do. This is what I think Dogen means by mind. Not the little kind of mind we imagine up here, but the vast mind. The greater you. The you that is beyond our imagination. Okay, and I'm just wondering if I should skip this next paragraph, 36. I think I will, except for the last little line there, because you'll never guess what it means in a way. I gotta tell you. It says, the last line is refraining from unwholesome action and doing a wholesome action are like the donkey has not left, yet the horse has arrived. The donkey has not left, yet the horse has arrived. This is one of those expressions you'll never guess. But this is what it means. This is from my research. The donkey is a metaphor for an ordinary person. In this anyway, you donkey. It just means an ordinary person, right? It has a little bit more of a pejorative meaning, perhaps, when we use it. So that's the, you know, we're kind of muddling along in our confusion, the greed and maybe anger that we have, trying to find a way out. And the horse is a metaphor, a symbol for awakening. So in this last line, Dogen points out for us, our reality is, that we don't somehow drop off our delusion and then suddenly become awake like a light bulb going off. And that's it. Dust our hands, job well done. But rather, both delusion and awakening are present in the same moment. The donkey is still here when the horse arrives. So let's leave that and go on to what I think is one of the jewels of this little piece of writing. And it's a story. So let's read it, and I'll read, I think, 37 and 38 here, because they kind of go together. Bai Jui of the Tang Dynasty was the lay student of Ruman, Zen Master Hu Guan, and a Dharma descendant of Mazu, Zen Master Daiji of Jiangxi. Now these names, of course, you don't need to worry about them, but just to know, these were kind of great historical teachers in the Chinese Zen tradition, the Chan tradition. Anyway, one day, Jui said, "What is the essential meaning of Buddha Dharma?" Very profound question, right? Tell me the essence. What is this all about? And Daolin said, "Refrain from unwholesome action, do wholesome action." I think we've heard this before somewhere, right? And Jui said, "If that is so, a 3-year-old child could say it." Daolin said, "A 3-year-old child may say this, but even an 80-year-old person cannot practice it." Jui bowed in gratitude and left. Jui, a descendant of General Bai, was an extraordinary poet. He was regarded as a man of letters who had lived 24 lifetimes as a poet. He was sometimes called Manjushri, or Maitreya. Manjushri is, of course, the Bodhisattva of wisdom, Maitreya, the Buddha to come. So highly respected, in other words. There was no place he was not known, and no place his writing did not circulate. Well, Jui, and again, there are often several names given for these great historical figures, but I won't go into that. Jui was a very renowned Chinese poet. In fact, he's one of the three great poets of the Tang Dynasty. He was also a government official, including being governor of three different provinces. So governor means that he had passed the prestigious and unbelievably challenging exam to become a high-rank civil servant. And just to give you an idea of how challenging this was during the Tang Dynasty, roughly 2 people out of 100 who had studied for most of their lives, up, you know, they're about 20 years old or something, 19, 18 at this time, 2 people out of 100 would pass the first rank. There were other ranks, but Jui was one of them, so a brilliant person. Anyway, later in his life, he also cultivated Chan or Zen practice, as Dogen indicates here. And although he never resided long in a monastery, and he never became a monk, he did travel and study with many Zen teachers in the Tang Dynasty. And there's a number of stories about him, along with many of his poems. So, let me tell you a little bit about Daolin. Now, the Chinese master. Daolin was on pilgrimage after he had finished his personal training. So now he was a teacher. And he was visiting Mount Qinwang. And there stood an old pine tree whose branches, very lush with foliage, were kind of twisted and bent. Kind of bent over like an umbrella of some kind. And Daolin went over and perched himself on top of it. It is for this reason that people during that period, during the Tang Dynasty, called him Bird's Nest Master. Bird's Nest Master. And next to him were some nesting magpies. And they were spontaneously tamed in his presence. So he had some pretty good energy around him. So he was also known as the monk of the magpie nest, because he had befriended and tamed these little nest of magpies. Now, just going back to the story between Jui and Daolin, I want to add a little bit, because Dogen doesn't give the whole story here. So here's the first part that Dogen didn't include in this part. Jui was a great poet of the Tang Dynasty. When he was officiating as a governor in a certain district, there was a Chan master within his jurisdiction, popularly known as Daolin, or Bird's Nest Master. For he used to practice his meditation on a seat made of thickly grown branches of a tree. The governor poet once visited him and said, "What a dangerous seat you have up in the tree. Yours is far worse than mine," retorted the master. "I'm the governor of this district, and I don't see what danger is in it." "Then you don't know yourself. When your passions burn and your mind is unsteady, what is more dangerous than that?" I'll come back to that in a moment, but let's just read 39. And so here's Dogen's comments about Jui and his little dialogue that he had with Daolin. "However, he was a beginner and a latecomer in the Buddha way. It seems that he never dreamed of the true meaning of refrain from unwholesome action and do wholesome action. He thought that Daolin presented this phrase in a merely intellectual way. Jui had not heard and did not know that refrain from unwholesome action and do wholesome action are teachings of the Buddha way, which are thousands and myriad years old and apply to now and then. He responded in a way that he did because he was not standing in the Buddha Dharma and did not understand the Buddha Dharma." Dogen could also be pretty harsh in his criticism when he felt certain ancestors of the past didn't quite meet the mark. But I think Dogen was a little hard here on Jui, perhaps hard on him just to make a point. The challenges that Jui faced as governor must have taught him, and maybe even scarred him as he grappled with trying to do good and trying to avoid evil. We face moral dilemmas, and while ethical standards and precepts, commandments, all help us, Dogen tells us again and again we must go beyond intellectual understanding and allow our life to manifest from the deepest source without getting in the way. Zazen is one gateway to the totality of our life. And as Dogen describes it elsewhere, the gate of Zazen has no beginning and no end. When doing Zazen, what precepts are not upheld? What merits are not produced? Dogen asks. So then Dogen kind of teases this apart a little bit more for us. Even if you caution against doing unwholesome action by intention and encourage doing wholesome action by intention, you actualize refrain from. On the whole, in the Buddha Dharma, what you first hear from a teacher and what you finally achieve are the same. This is called genuine from head to tail. It's also called inconceivable cause, inconceivable effect, or Buddha cause, Buddha effect. Cause and effect in the Buddha way is neither a heterogeneous maturing nor a homogeneous stream. Since this is so, without Buddha cause, Buddha effect cannot be experienced. Because Daolin expressed this essential teaching, it was Buddha Dharma. Well, in the first part here, I think Dogen offers us some comfort in case we are a little confused or a little distressed over what we've read so far. Setting our intention to do good and to avoid harmful action, perhaps by studying and practicing the precepts, for example, he says we actualize refrain from. That too is included in this deep sense of refrain from. That is fine. That's good. Don't ignore it. And again, though, he encourages us to see beyond the everyday divisions and categories that we so quickly erect. I don't think he's saying they're irrelevant or unnecessary, just that we must open to a more inclusive vision and understanding. Mostly, I think, through our Zazen practice. The journey we are all on is true and vital at the beginning, middle, and end. But so often we want to get to the end of the journey. And Dogen is telling us, don't fall into that. The beginning is just as vital, the middle is just as vital as the end. Now, I must say, Dogen's words on cause and effect here kind of puzzle me, but with my kind of limited understanding at this point, I think Buddha cause and Buddha effect is really the meeting of our life with full openness and dropping off our self-centeredness. So Buddha cause, I think, is that actual meeting of our life. And the Buddha effect maybe is the response to that meeting. What arises when we fully meet our life? Buddha cause, Buddha effect. Now, this is rather abstract, I know. But perhaps another way to say this is that when we deeply open to the ground of our being, wisdom and compassion arise. Nothing special needs to be done. Buddha cause, Buddha effect. And the next one is 41, I think it's kind of cool. Even if unwholesome action fills worlds beyond worlds and swallows up all things beyond all things, refrain from is emancipation. Wholesome action is wholesome action in the beginning, middle, and end. It is the true essence, marks, substance, and activity of do, as in do wholesome action, as it is. Because Juyi did not follow this track, he said, even a three-year-old child can say this. Lacking the capacity for true expression, he uttered these words. Well, when I read this, I felt arising in me, as it does sometimes a little bit too often, the feeling that today's world is filled with evil, filled with unwholesome actions. And we could make a long list of events and cruelties, both distant and near, that we might call evil or unwholesome. But Dogen says, even in those moments when it seems that way, even when these extreme times when evil appears almost as a way of being in the world itself, he says, return to refrain from. Return to your true nature of wisdom and compassion. Such powerful advice, because despair is a dead end. He says, give birth to wholesome action. Refrain from. And really, this is our bodhisattva path. We must see past our self-satisfactions, self-involvement. We must see beyond our own suffering, hurts, and confusion. The world calls upon each of us to see all the blindnesses, injustices, barriers that are built into how and where we live, as well as those we see at a distance. Our intention may be good, but can we also acknowledge our ignorance and harmful assumptions? Unwholesome action also results from the protective structures that we hardly notice. Power and privilege, these kind of structures, can we see those too clearly? Can we see the unwholesome action that arises? Not from our intention or from maybe anything we do, but from those structures that have created and supported. Are we safe from creating unwholesome actions with the best of our intentions? I think all of this we need to deeply consider. Refrain from is emancipation, Dogen writes. So he goes on, what a pity, Juyi, Why did you say this? Because you have not touched upon Buddha wind, meaning the Buddha teaching. Do you know about a three-year-old child? Do you understand the principle of a child of a child's inherent capacity? Those who understand know that a three-year-old child also understands all Buddhas in the three worlds. How can those who cannot understand all Buddhas in the three worlds understand a three-year-old child? Do not think that to face a person is to understand a person. Do not think that not to face a person is to not understand a person. What is it? How is it to know a three-year-old child? Maybe we see the cranky three-year-old child in a store, or the sweet smile of a three-year-old child walking down the street, or the sleeping form of her on the back seat of a car. But what is it to know a three-year-old child? Can we see, no matter what she's doing, how completely she expresses her life? And how often do we stand before our partner, a friend, a colleague, and not see them, but we just see our projections? How often do we see things as obstacles or as sources of profit? Or not see them at all? How often do we deeply see ourselves with our projections, assumptions, distractions? So much remains hidden from us. Dogen asks us here and again, return to a foundation prior to good and evil. This refrain from, or the refrain from evil, or refrain from unwholesome action, to do good or carry out actions of good, when seen from the place of the Buddha Dharma, these are not only about ethics and morality in the conventional sense. Dogen encourages us to reside in that all-comprehensive place free from comparison and understand that refrain from unwholesome action and cultivating wholesome action is the very activity of our life itself. The very activity of our life itself. At the beginning of this piece of writing by Dogen, we learned that this simple gatha, this simple verse, has been transmitted and is the path of seven Buddhas. And Dogen says, it is your path as well. This path is beyond comparing ourselves to others. This path is about recognizing the all-inclusive nature of our very being. But Dogen kind of goes on and on a little bit more in this vein, these other passages. I just want to touch a couple of these passages and then I'll see if you have any questions. So let's look at 44. An old master said, when you were born, you have the capacity to roar like a lion. The capacity to roar like a lion is a virtue of the Tathagata, turning the Dharma wheel. It is the turning of the Dharma wheel. Did you know that when you were born, you had the capacity to roar like a lion? Roar like a lion means to give voice to the Dharma, right? To speak the Dharma. And because this is a virtue of the Tathagata, Tathagata is a word for Buddha, turning the Dharma wheel, giving life to the ever-flowing Dharma. And this is true of you. From the moment you are born, you have the capacity to roar like a lion. You too have the virtue of the Tathagata, turning the Dharma wheel. And yet, we must actualize this. We must bring this into our life. We must see through the three poisons of greed, hate, and delusion to express our life fully. Let's look at the last one, 49. Such a beautiful way to end. The child's expression is entrusted to you. It is not entrusted to the child. The old person's practice of the unattainable is entrusted to you. It is not entrusted to the old person. To understand, speak, and live in this way is the point of the Buddha Dharma. So Dogen ends with these beautiful words. The child's expression is entrusted to you. Not some child sitting over there in the corner. Not you when you are just a little child. But you right now, you, please bring forth the child's expression of the Dharma. Enact it. Bring it alive in your life now. And the old person's practice of the unattainable is entrusted to you. Old Dao Lin, those and great masters like him, practicing what we may call the inexpressible, the unattainable, and sharing it with all of us and their students at the time. That too is your practice. Not Dao Lin's practice, not some old, dusty Zen master sitting on a cushion somewhere. It's your practice, Dogen says. And then he tells us in his last lines, please study, come to know, understand, speak, and live the Buddha Dharma. This is what he asked of his monks, of his nuns. This is what he asks of us today. Speak and live the Dharma. Whew. Well, we made it through. Skipping a little bit here and there, but we made it through this text. Thank you for your patience and diligence. I thought rather than breaking up into groups right now, because this is our last time, I'd like to suggest this, that we'll have some Q&A like we did before. See if you have any questions or comments you want to make. Then we'll have a kinhin, a 10-minute kinhin. and come back. And depending on the time, we'll either have a short sit or we'll have a round. People kind of say hello to each other by saying what this weekend has given you, briefly, like maybe about, you know, 2 sentences or so each, so that we can get through everybody. Does that sound kind of right? And then we'll end close with the refuges, of course, like we usually do. So, I can't see everyone on the screen, but questions or thoughts on what we've just read that, or that you wanted to seek a little more information about? Or in general, that's fine too. Will?
Sorry, I might be getting a little bit off topic, but last night I had the opportunity to go through the Nishijima Cross translation of it, and I noticed that it's much longer, like noticeably longer, and I'm just wondering why there is kind of that discrepancy in the length and just simply the sheer word count between the two.
That's interesting. You know, I didn't read the cross translation, Nishijima cross translation, so I can't say. There are several versions of the Shobo Genzo, and I'm not sure which one they use to translate. So the short answer is I don't know why. Whether they use simply more words to express the same stuff, or as far as I could tell, when I looked at the Japanese version that I have, everything was included in the Tanahashi translation.
Can I say Nishijima Cross tend to be more wordy?
Oh yeah. Did you hear that? Kate was mentioning it. They tend to be a little more wordy.
Sorry?
Yeah. They tend to be wordy.
More wordy. It's almost a different document.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Translation is so challenging when you're dealing with languages as different from English as Japanese is. So there's another translation by a guy named, I think his last name is Herbert, online by the Shasta Abbey. So that's another one to look at. And his translations tend to be very more accessible. He kind of explains things as he goes along.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Welcome. Any other questions? Let me just check the other screen here since I... So you're ready for the quiz that I'm going to give you? Email everyone after this. Check your understanding. Okay. Okay. Jenna, please, go ahead.
Hi. I was hoping you might elaborate on that dialogue where... Sorry, I'm forgetting the name of the master who's